Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable panel for this Friday, the 18th of December. Very nice to have you with us, and it's very nice to have you join the studio. Where are you going to make it? All right, he's going to make it. All's good. We're just Alan's filing in. He was spending some quality time with us before we went on.
He's doing a favor for me. That's why he's filing in now.
spending good time with us. It's Friday. It's the 18th of December. Good morning. Welcome. Listen to a little Star Wars music. Big movie opened last night.
We're going tonight, Roselle and I.
I went to go see it last night.
You saw it already?
Yeah. You'll love it.
Unless you don't.
Unless you don't. Unless you. Unless.
Thank you.
Yes. If you're a fan and you're going, you'll love it.
I'm a big Harrison Ford fan.
He is amazing.
Yeah.
He is amazing.
I think he's great. I think
now listen to me.
Yes, please. Please.
I know you in movies.
Yeah.
Keep your mouth shut.
What do you mean?
You talk through movies?
They're spoilers.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. Well, do you remember Was it The Crying Game?
The Crying Game.
The Crying Game.
You spoiled The Crying Game?
I did. It had an ending. Now, it's a year out.
I don't think it was a year out.
Yeah. Well, all I did was to say
I was still in the theater.
I was astounded when it ended in this woman.
We've seen the movie, so you don't have to say it now.
Spoiler.
Selma Kaplan said, "You are never allowed to speak about movies again in your life."
Who said that? Was it Joe?
Selma.
Right. So just keep that in mind when you go see it. Welcome. Let me introduce our panel to you this morning. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Hi, Joe. This is all messed up because now we have to change our passwords.
We were told to change our passwords by the
IT people.
So you mean your system is messed up?
Yeah.
Not yet.
Oh, the morning's young, Rosemary. Also, we have Rosemary Armeo with us. She is a journalism professor at the University at Albany. She's also an investigative journalist, and it's a great pleasure to have her on the program.
Thank you very much. Great pleasure to be here.
Thank you very much. Also, Barbara Smith joins us each and every Friday, and it's always a pleasure to have her on the program.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. Thank you very much for being here. Okay, so let's go to the stories of the day and what's happening in the world. A reminder, we welcome your letters, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. And if you go to wamc.org/roundtable, you can post your comments there and see what is going on. All right, let's go to the story regarding the president and ground troops. The president is expected to have a news conference this afternoon, I believe, at 1:30. President Obama, seeking to counter pressure for a military escalation in response to terrorist attacks, told a group of news columnists this week that sending significant ground forces back to the Middle East could conceivably result in the deaths of 100 American soldiers every month. In a private session at the White House, Mr. Obama explained that his refusal to redeploy large numbers of troops to the region was rooted in the grim assumption that the casualties and costs would rival the worst of the Iraq War. In such a scenario, he said, a renewed commitment could take up to $10 billion a month and leave as many as 500 troops wounded every month in addition to those killed, a toll he deemed not commensurate to the threat.
I'll start off. I think Obama is finally taking seriously the idea that he has not expressed his own views strongly enough, passionately enough, especially in the face of Republicans who are terrible hawks, who are calling for banning Muslims and carpet bombing the Middle East and other horrible things. His position, I think, has always been defensible and wise. And I'm glad that he's finally talking to people. I don't understand why that conference with the news columnist was off the record. Word has kind of leaked out. But he's got to talk to us about it. I think he's right. He's got to act like he's right.
Why do you think that it has been what it has been over the last several weeks?
What has been what it's been?
His response.
because he's just an intellectual. I think he has thought through all of this. He has, as these numbers that you gave illustrate, he's weighed the pros and cons, and he has decided, okay, this is the best way to handle it. And he sees things like the attack on Paris just as he called it. It's like, oh, a setback. But it doesn't change my plan. It's a setback. That's not what people obviously want to hear in this country. They're calling for a ground war when at the same time they say they don't want us involved in the Middle East. There's no way you get both of those things. You have one or the other. And Obama just is not acting like a human talking to other passionate humans. He's acting like a scholar.
And scholars are not human, ergo.
They're cold. They're more of a cold.
Analytical.
Yeah, analytical.
Yes,
okay,
analytical.
That's good.
Yes,
that's good.
Indeed.
You know,
indeed.
I have a different, I have a pretty similar feeling to you. I think this is a great man. I think when he talks about 100 people being killed a week or whatever it is, he knows what he's doing. But I also think this is a unique possibility that this is the American system of politics in which we have a lame duck president. So the first time, you really have to watch every single, the first time seeking re-election, every word you're saying. But when you are on your way out, you can pretty well do it the right way. And I have tremendous respect for him. Yay, it's professorial. But on the other hand, I think he's right about what he's saying.
I agree.
And so therefore, he doesn't have to pander in a way that you might if you were facing another election.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because I think when he has run, he shows that he's really adept as a candidate.
Absolutely.
And he knows how to connect with people.
He does.
And he has shown that he knows how to connect with people in other contexts. I'm thinking about these tragic aftermaths of massacres and how he comforts. He becomes a comforter in chief. And he just seems to have this ability to couch his language to the audience and to the moment, but not around this. And I do think, I agree with both of you, I do think it's a fact that he is very intelligent, very analytical, and he's just basically, he's not an alarmist, even though he's he has fingers on every button. He's not an alarmist, and I don't think that's what it's apparently looking at the other, party and the people who are running in it. Apparently, that's not what people want these days. They want red meat.
Go ahead, Jeff. Please.
So why do they want the red meat? Possibly, I think of this, and I apologize, but I, if you look at this in terms of numbers, we have lost in the terrorist attack in San Bernardino 14 individuals, which is a tragedy. But the one thing the president said of putting a number on it and saying you're going to lose hundreds of soldiers a month, and I don't understand why that isn't more of a focus on all people who are discussing this, because it's very easy to say let's put boots on the ground, but it doesn't seem to mean to extrapolate to the point that yes, but it could also mean that those boots
lots
will not
of
be coming
caskets
home.
Coming
right.
home.
Look, this is very simple, I think, and that is the president is their political enemy. They want to do anything they can, as Mitch McConnell said years ago, to get rid of him. And any time they can make anything out of anything, they're going to do it. So you're right if you're taking a rational look at the way in which this guy is talking to the American people and 100 people a week or a month or whatever it is. It's what he should be saying. But they're not concerned about that. They want to win an election. And they're going to dirty him as much as they can, and they're going to take something, and they're going to say it again and again and again, which is the height of pedagogy, and repeat it and repeat it and repeat it until some of it sticks some of the time.
I think there's fault on both sides. I think the Republicans are verging on treason with their ridiculous demands for a full-out war, which is so irresponsible, and calling the president, who doesn't want that, a feckless weakling. That was the quote from Chris Christie in the last debate. It puts our president in the bad position of being a president under fire while he's trying to conduct diplomacy and war. And that's a horrible thing. thing to do. But on the other hand, the mood of the country is the business of our president. I once had a boss who said that morale in the office wasn't his concern. People made their own moods. And that's just simply not true. It's the job of a leader to rally people, to uphold them, to comfort them when it's needed. And he can do it. You're absolutely right, Barbara. He's an amazing motivator and speaker. So why isn't he doing it now? He's coming to this late. I think his advisors have sat him down and said, you got to do something about this. And he's responding. But it is late.
I don't know. I just have a different sense of this, Rosemary. I think he gets where he is now. He gets where he is in history now. He sees his position as being a rational actor. And when you compare him with a Trumpet and his, you know, his stuff with Putin, it's all over the tabs today.
Yeah, we'll talk about that.
Right? I love Putin. Putin loves me. You know, and you.
So this is Trump, not Obama.
Yeah,
you're
Trump.
Talking about,
and you
right?
compare the stability of this man who was the president of the most important nation in the world, acting appropriately with the clowns.
But we are not a nation that appreciates intellectual scholarship, analytics.
Or facts.
Or facts, yeah. We
well,
are,
maybe we should.
Well, we should, but Obama is acting as if we do, and he is paying a price for that. And so is his position of a rational response, a rational, measured response to the Syrian crisis.
So what's the price?
The price is
you
that
said he's paying a price.
He's losing support. He's now spending a lot of time making speeches like he did last night. He's going to do today. He is losing support even among, for example, Hillary, who carried out his policy, is now acting against him. And I think whoever comes into office, Democrat or Republican, we're going to have a escalated response to war in the Middle East. And I am convinced that that's not a good idea.
You know, I am so impressed with what you've just said because it sets something off in my mind, which is there are those who will write me right now and say Al Gore did win the presidency, but he wasn't the president, right?
Right?
And what did he do that was wrong, that did more to cost them votes than anything else?
Well, he separated himself
from exactly. Clinton. Exactly.
Hillary's not making the same mistake.
Well, to some degree, she is.
No, I don't think so.
Well, you're the one who said it.
She is posing it. And Barbara, I'm going to give you a minute here.
You can hear me.
I yield the floor.
You can hear me inhaling to get ready to speak. Yes.
Gore had nothing to do with Clinton. Cut him out entirely. Clinton has embraced Obama, said he had terrible circumstances. He did the best he could then, and I helped him to it. But the situation has changed. And indeed, it has. What's happening in Syria is much different now than when she was in office and carrying out his policy. So I don't think it is split. The Republicans want you to think that.
I think you're wrong. Barbara?
Yeah, well, this is taking it to another kind of a part of this discussion, which is what Joe raised. Why are not people alarmed at the reality, the credible prediction that at least 100 people would die a week if indeed we got involved on the ground there? And what I just wanted to point out is that so few people in this country actually have connections
Correct.
To the military via family members that it's a tiny percentage.
And how do you fix that, Barbara?
I don't know how we...
Well, you know, Charlie Rangel says get the draft.
Yeah, I'm not talking about solutions. I'm just talking about how it's an abstraction. You know, they hear 100, people there...
That's not my
being
kid.
Killed. They don't visualize because they know where their kids are and they know that they're not in the military.
So. There's not the outrage over this war that there was in Vietnam, and that is because every family was connected to, was touched by death and maiming in that war. We don't have that now. So bringing back the draft, I sure don't think that's a good idea. And yet, it would definitely make people more involved with the politics of this war.
Well, what about race in the draft, Barbara?
Well, you mean the fact that disproportionately the
exactly
war in Vietnam
I mean.
Was fought yeah. by those who were poor and of color?
Yes.
Yeah. And see, that's, we share that generation. So we, that was like a rhetorical question for me or a softball question for me because I was in college, I was female, but I knew young men who were waiting with terror to see what their number was going to be. Mm-hmm. And if you, and in some cases, if you were in the right college institution program or whatever, you got to avoid in that way.
Sure.
So it was really a class race, you know, a class race quagmire situation besides the quagmire of the foreign policy itself.
Yeah.
Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll get a few letters, and then we'll take our news break at the bottom of the hour. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Support for WAMC comes from Berkshire Co-op Market, Great Barrington, Massachusetts, a community-owned natural grocery store dedicated to sustainable agriculture, the local economy, and the environment, berkshire.coop. Harney & Sons Fine Teas, holiday gifts of loose teas to sachets and cookies, treats, teapots, teaware, and other gift ideas in Millerton and Soho and online, harney.com. And Subsidium Technologies, a single point of contact for area enterprises to identify telecommunications plans working to maximize information technology efficiency and employee productivity. SubsidiumTech.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. And we welcome your letters. We just have about a minute, Alan, before we have to go to a break.
Okay.
Another break.
Okay. All right. Our very good friend, Tony, says Obama, in quotes, in big black letters, always had a problem explaining himself to the American public. I admire him, but this is not new, says Tony. But I do remember very well, with great affection, how he turned those crowds on when he was running for president the first time, and you had the kids going crazy about him, and he knew how to do it. He knew how to play it. So I just think he's doing this because he thinks it's right. Okay, so then Michael says, some say, well, they're soldiers. They were trained to fight in war, unquote. But none of their sons serve and risk coming home in a box. If they did, they'd be whistling another tune.
And one more.
And Daisy says, I love Obama, but he does have a flaw. Always had it, that he's above getting his hands dirty. It's why Hillary knows how to play this, how to play the politics when that is necessary. Obama, as great as he is, could take a few lessons from her. And by the way, I guess Hillary won the first time, right? Hillary won the first time.
We'll be right back after this short break. WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We welcome your letters, WAMC.org/roundtable. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Barbara Smith making up the group this morning as we end out this week. And we go to a few more letters and then we'll move on to some other topics.
Oh, yeah, a few more letters. Thanks, Joe.
Sure.
Jules, our wonderful Jules, who writes us all the time, every day, sometimes a couple of times, says, the only way to garner enough public support to end the war madness is to bring back the universal draft, both men and women. Okay, Jules. And then Lily says, it's very easy to call for boots on the ground if they're not your boots or your loved ones. Have they learned nothing from the past 14 years? My husband retired soon after more than 20 years of active service in the Navy, and we're both very much frightened and dismayed by the Republican calls for war and blatant fear-mongering we hear daily. See, got that? And then you want another one, Joe, or not?
Yeah.
Okay. Mattman says, our president correctly stated that the possible coalition partners aren't equipped to handle an all-out IS skirmish. We would do all the lifting, and 100 body bags a week sounds too much like Vietnam footage, not a legacy enhancer. Mm-hmm. Today I'm thinking clown car, owner of the railroad, and president walks away from the station. And Corey says, I have never voted for Obama and do not like most of what he believes. However, I have to give credit where credit is due. As a combat vet of both Afghanistan and Iraq, I think he's making the right decision. It is incredibly courageous to stand up for peace in the face of so many calling for war. He's right when he says that our actions have consequences. The more we bomb them, the more they will shoot up movie theaters and the like. Good job, Mr. President. Now, if you'd only stop the drone strikes.
Sure.
And Kevin says, let's start saying, quotation marks, troops again or soldiers. Boots on the ground is too abstract, says Kevin.
Good point.
And Peter says, the effect of homegrown lone wolves and resulting violence against Muslim Americans merely assists ISIS in recruiting and expanding its reach, and rabble-rousing by the Republicans only makes it worse. Okay. And then Tom says, good morning, Roundtable. If the Chicken Hawks want to get us back into war, one, taxes have to be raised to pay for it, and two, the draft has to be brought back. Not necessarily about the taxes, you know. Somehow they managed the last time to do it all off budget. I never quite understood where that money
was. It was all hidden money, and now we have this huge deficit that the same people who built it are screaming about.
Okay. And then Cody says, good morning, panel. In the light of the canonization of Teresa, I nominate Trump as the next saint. I'm so sorry. Next saint. He's actually performed verifiable miracles in contrast to the ostensible ones by Teresa. What else would you call the leading polls having said any and everything that could possibly offend any section of society? Also, the late Christopher Hitchens' polemic against Teresa, the missionary position, I don't think that's appropriate.
I don't really know that any of that's appropriate.
I don't like it.
No, he's comparing it.
It was a cheap shot to say your missionary position.
That was the title of the book.
Whose book?
Christopher Hitchens.
No, that's true.
So what? That's true, but so what? It's still not right. I don't care if it's Christopher Hitchens or his mother.
I actually use that book in classes because Hitchens painted Teresa as a real woman, not as a mystical saint. And she did have problems. For example, not problems, but fault flaws. She loved being a groupie.
Issues.
She loved hanging out with, like, the Pope and other celebrities.
So?
And she also had issues with believing in God and believing in Jesus because she saw such horrible things. Now, doesn't that make it more amazing that she ended up doing saintly things, that she had flaws rather than the picture that we usually got?
Christopher Hitchens wrote a great book. Which of us don't have flaws, Rosemary?
But we paint saints as if we don't. Yeah. So I like that letter.
Oh, good. I'm so glad you did. I didn't. Okay, so for Marcia, I agree with Rosemary. The draft would serve to spread the grief of war, although I'm not a fan of war. While Barbara's point is well taken, isn't there the same disparity today in our armed forces? It's still the poor minorities that are members of the Army. Oh, absolutely. And I don't think Barbara thinks anything else.
No, except that because it's not a draft situation, I'm sure a large proportion of young people of color who go in because they don't have other choices.
They don't have jobs.
But the upside is that they come out off sometimes with a skill. It's a path to, having a solid, economic future at times. I'm not making excuses. I'm not sending anybody into the military. What I'm saying is that it's a little bit different when it's not a draft.
Mm-hmm.
Little bit different.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, yes, and that was from Marcia. And let's see here. Let's see. I got a note yesterday I think I should tell you all from somebody who we read his letters all the time. But yesterday we left this letter out, and basically the letter was, I'm hurt and discouraged that you didn't read my letter today. Well, we don't read everybody's letter every day. I'm so sorry. I wrote back and said, where are the thank yous for all the letters we read? But maybe that was too snarky, do you think?
A little snarky.
Okay.
We expect that of you, though, Alan.
Okay, thank you for that. And I expect it of you, too. War. Absolutely nothing. Anyone who gets involved in a ground war in the Middle East should have their head examined. Robert Gates, former Secretary of Defense. And hello, I hope today is a Tyrannosaurus rump-free day. You guys do a great job. And also to Rosemary, I'm sending a radio flirt.
Oh, my
George,
gosh.
You have an admirer there. and for good reason. Let's see here.
We don't read every letter, but we read that, that one.
That's one that should not have been read.
Judy says, my husband decided to go to the men's room during what turned out to be the big reveal moment of the crying game. When he came back, he nonchalantly asked, did I miss anything? Unbelievable.
I thought that was a big reveal in the men's room.
That's hilarious.
Okay. Hubble sees the Force awakening in a newborn star, and then we get this letter from Bonnie saying, coincidence? I think not.
That's some great marketing.
I think not. Let's see here.
Can we move on?
Yes.
Well, absolutely. All of these things. The problem is that I'm reading them seriatim, right? That means one after the other. And then and then what happens is, you know, everybody's sending me things like, what's for lunch at the Copaic store? And that gets in the way. Or
let's move on.
We'll move on.
Yeah. Naringas, florists.
We don't need those.
I have to go over those.
Prosecutors and defense attorneys met Thursday behind closed doors to decide what happens next in the case against Baltimore police officer William Porter, but did not set a new date for a retrial. We talked about this yesterday as to what would happen behind those closed doors. Well, we don't know. We're in the same spot as last night, essentially, said Terry Charles, a court spokeswoman. Charles said she didn't have any more information. Judge Barry Williams ruled a mistrial Wednesday afternoon in the first trial in the Freddie Gray case. The lawyers were seen Thursday morning at Circuit Judge Barry Williams' chambers. A uniformed deputy was stationed outside. About half an hour after the lawyers started arriving, they were seen leaving the chambers. They declined to comment, citing the judge's gag order in the case.
And that gag order is proving to be very problematic for many of us who are trying to judge what's going on. Mm-hmm. If the jury came back, and I think it's about half black and half white on the jury. If that jury comes back and they tell you that it was a 6-6, split, we would know that it's probably impossible to get a conviction in this if that's what the prosecutor wants. If they say it was 11-1, that would be a whole other story. But because of the gag order, we don't know. Do we?
No, we do not know.
No.
He refuses to let that out. And as I said yesterday, I think that is definitely frustrating for journalists, but a good move by the judge, because this guy has to go on trial again,
yes.
Perhaps. There are five other officers on trial, and you don't want to prejudice the possible potential jury pool.
Right. And not to mention the possible violence within the city.
Yeah. Oh,
were six-six split and it was perceived as racial, that could certainly add to trouble.
Yeah. So. Did you have anything? I'm sorry, Barbara.
Not really. I mean, I do agree, though, that judicially not having that information get out is the right way to go. Yeah. It's frustrating because those of us, you know, who are following this story want to know more. But that's not.
And the jurors.
You had to think about the court system versus.
Exactly. This is where the right of the free press conflicts with the right to a fair trial. Mm-hmm. But the jurors aren't talking either. It's not just the gag rule on the gag order on the officers of the court has held, but the jurors haven't talked either. And so
I
think that's
would
important.
They be unseated if they were? If they did?
No, they might be put in jail for contempt.
Yeah, oh, besides that. Yeah.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue and finish up our segment this morning. We have a few more issues to discuss. We'll get to those in just a moment. We welcome your letters, roundtable at WAMC.org. Post them online, WAMC.org/roundtable. WAMC.org/roundtable. We will be right back after this break.
Support for WAMC comes from Arts Mid-Hudson and the Pauling Concert Series. The a cappella group New York Polyphony performs medieval melodies and contemporary compositions tonight. Trinity Pauling School Campus, paulingconcertseries.org. The Albany Pine Bush Preserve, presenting the 7th Annual Cookie Burner Stroll on December 26th, an outdoor guided exercise hike for ages 10 and up. Pre-registration is required, albanypinebush.org. And Jenkinstown Motors, New Paltz, a repair shop for domestic and foreign autos and specializing in Japanese cars for over 30 years. JenkinstownMotors.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning, listening to music of John Williams from the new soundtrack, Force Awakens, which opened officially last night and has already made more money than any other film this year, and is in line to be perhaps the biggest grossing film of all time.
What's the next one up?
I believe it is. I can tell you in a moment.
Yeah,
I should Jurassic know this at the Park, top of. I well, that was this
what,
year.
What was
Jurassic World?
Was it Avatar?
Avatar, and
which I didn't like.
Oh, I like that.
Oh, I like that movie.
I didn't like that movie.
Yeah, I like.
You're
the,
wrong.
I like the blue. I like the blue people. And
maybe I fell asleep.
$208.4 million already.
Wow. How much did it cost to make this movie?
I think it was one. Well, they've already made their money.
They've already
back.
Made the money.
Yeah,
back.
They've already made the money
in
back
in the first weekend. That's
yeah.
astounding. Isn't
well, in the
it?
First
it's
day,
the first weekend,
yeah,
the first day of the weekend,
sure, the first day.
Today is
yeah.
the start.
I mean,
of the
it
weekend.
Did start internationally on Wednesday, but still, it's
amazing.
It's remarkable, and it so.
Do I have to wear? We're going tonight. Do I have to wear an outfit?
No. See, that was when I went last night. I was expecting a lot of people. Although when I printed out my
a
ticket,
Wookie. You'd be a good Wookie.
when you go, when I went into the theater, I thought I would see a lot of people in costume,
yeah.
and they weren't.
They're discouraging that.
Well, that's right. When I printed out my ticket, there was, you know, please, no lightsabers, no masks. You could, you know, they wanted you to maybe get in the spirit, but they didn't want you to be
dangerous.
Was it right? around safety? Oh, I was going to ask, yeah. safety concerns or?
Yeah. Well, you know, every show is sold out. You have mm-hmm. a lot of people crammed into a space, and you don't need some guy next to you yielding a lightsaber.
How early did you have to get there to get a good seat?
Well, the theater I went to was great because I got my seat when I ordered my ticket.
An assigned seat. Oh, that's great. We have that in we have that in some places we go.
It's highly unusual these days, so.
Yeah, I really like it because mm-hmm. then you can say, okay, I'm going to sit in the back row mm-hmm. so I don't have people yelling at me because I'm too tall.
Because you're 6 foot 9.
Yeah, so I just sit in the back.
I'd be one of those people.
Yeah, no, I understand. I understand it.
Could you shrink, please?
Right.
Slump.
Or could you please take your head off?
I try to be so accommodating to people, and then people still go,
Well, I think this is a terrific movie because it's part of our childhood. We're all talking about how old we are.
Not mine.
Part of my childhood.
Not mine. Thank you, Alan.
No. These older people, I forgot about them.
Right. Well, it's been around for 40-whatever years,
yeah.
so it's a good chunk
part of my young adulthood. It's part of our young adulthood.
Our wives, right, since 1977. So.
See, well, 60 Minutes did a treatment, as you know, this weekend.
With J.J. Abrams.
Yeah. And it's extraordinary. This guy really seems to know what he's doing. Because he delivered.
J.J.
Abrams, the director.
The director.
Who took over from George Lucas, don't you know?
Yes.
And it's Disney now.
Yeah.
Good news for Disney, mm-hmm. isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, and they bought a franchise and they paid a lot of money for it, and obviously it'll pay off, sure.
I wish absolutely. I had more than 3 shares.
Yeah.
I have 3.
They're doing good today.
I wish I had more than 3 shares
they're
of
doing,
anything.
they're doing good today. Because, you know, you had the original trilogy and then you had the second trilogy, which I think widely most people recognize of not being great movies.
Oh, that second trilogy was not great.
The Phantom Menace,
Wooden
Attack of the
acting.
Clones, and Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah.
Hey, you get something good, you keep it. We saw the new Creed, movie with the Rocky movie.
Yes.
It was good.
That's being very well reviewed.
Yeah.
Well, it's being better reviewed than it deserves. It's good, but it's the same old Rocky movie. That's what it is.
But the thing is, that Michael Jordan, the actor, he's fantastic. He was in Fruitvale Station.
Yes, he was. Yeah.
Didn't it got a Golden Globe nomination?
I believe.
It was good.
See, Roselle and I, she wants more intellectual content. And I
like
you know,
Danish
like,
girl, and you want to go see.
Yeah, yeah, right. That's true. That's going to be there. And then also, we saw Trumbo.
Oh yeah, I saw that.
Trumbo was great. That was a great movie.
Bryan Cranston is a great actor.
He played the Shadow. You know, that was Lamont.
That was
his
Lamont
brother.
Cranston, right? we will
just got it. Listeners, did you get it?
If you're 74 years old, you'll get it. Sponsored by Blue Coal.
Our clothes. Yes. Our clothes.
You went on this, Rosemary? No, you backed out. All right.
She's ticked off that we're not being more serious.
All right.
No, I'm not ticked off that you're not being more serious. I expect that of you.
Call the medics. I got to get the knife out.
Let's go to the story Alan mentioned earlier about Vladimir Putin saying that I wish that every story I read about this did not use the word bromance. But alas, it was used. Vladimir Putin found a moment Thursday during a wide-ranging news conference to offer a strong endorsement of Republican frontrunner Donald Trump, calling the billionaire presidential candidate the, quote, absolute leader in the presidential race. Putin consecrated a budding international bromance between the two men as he commented on the U.S. campaign for the White House, saying that Russia would work with whomever the American voters chose, but expressing special praise for Trump. Trump said in October that he would get along very well with Putin and applauded the Russian leader for his intervention against the Islamic State in Syria. But until Thursday, Trump's praise had gone unreciprocated. He is a very lively man, talented without doubt, Putin said when journalists approached him after the news conference and asked about Trump. He's saying he wants to go to another level of relations, closer, deeper relations with Russia. How can we not welcome that? Of course, we welcome that.
So what's this all about? That's the question for us, right, as a panel. Mm-hmm. What's this all about? So is Trump an authoritarian? Yes. Is Putin an authoritarian? Yes. Hence the bromance. You know, you get an authoritarian.
Are they both megalomaniacs?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Are they both horrible to minorities? Yes.
Right. So there you go. But there is the outsider theory, and I'm sure we'll hear it in a letter or two, that Putin is doing it because he is scared of Trump. Because if Trump is a megalomaniac and ready to commit troops and to fight with him in places like Ukraine, places like that, he's doing this because it will defeat Trump. Because after all, Putin may be popular in his home territory. He's not that popular here. So to interfere, you know.
That sounds like the Trump camp put out that theory. I don't believe that. I think it's a knock on the president, and I think Putin, because he is a megalomaniac, just enjoyed it. Just enjoyed the press he got, and he was having fun.
Yeah, no, I don't.
And
agree
I hate
with
all
you.
The attention it's getting.
No, I don't agree with you. Well, I mean, it's very unusual, Rosemary. Very unusual to have the Russian, you know, leader endorsing somebody in this.
Or any.
Yeah.
Leader from any other nation, right?
Right.
But particularly one that has a profile that Putin does.
Yeah. What do you think, Rosemary?
Well, I don't. I do think it's unusual, but he is a very unusual leader. He's done a lot of things, as has Trump, that are out of the box and really not very good. I wish they hadn't happened. And I don't think this means anything. He's just having fun. He's sticking his nose into the American election because he can.
Because he can.
And he has gotten tons of publicity for it.
Let's move on to
I just got to read you one letter, okay? One letter, really fast. It's from James. He says, Shadow, I'm 28 years old, and The Shadow is my favorite radio show. I own over 200 episodes from the first year with Orson Welles as Lamont to the later years with Bill Johnstone and Brett Morrison. Love The Shadow.
Great.
I thought I'd mention that.
Very, very cultured young man. Highly cultured.
28 years old.
28 years old.
No, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
He's very cultured.
The Shadow knows.
You got anything over there, Rosemary? Help me out here.
I don't know. The Shadow, Putin to The Shadow, I'm trying to think of the link.
But, you know, I got to tell you, I am in love with going online and getting these old shows. So I go and I press the button and there comes Paladin and you know, Have Gun Will Travel. Mm-hmm. And I watch them. I watch two every time I'm on the bike and that takes my hour up.
That's wonderful.
So it's wonderful.
You're bringing back memories.
Yeah.
I'm feeling old.
Final story this morning. Enrique Marquez, who supplied the assault rifles used to kill 14 people in a massacre in San Bernardino, California, was arrested Thursday, charged with crimes including conspiring to support terrorists. Court papers show that he and one of the attackers had steeped themselves for years in radical and violent Islamist propaganda, including the teachings of the extremist cleric and bomb-making techniques from an Al-Qaeda magazine.
If ever a guy should be pleading with his lawyers to go get the best deal possible, I would be saying this guy is the one who should be doing it, because the other two are dead. He supplied them with the weapons, allegedly, and therefore he's gonna take the hit for everybody.
This is a very upsetting story, though. Did you notice how young he was when that relationship was formed?
Yes, 2007. He's 24 years old now, so you're talking about a 16, 17-year-old kid.
Right, indeed. And also the fact that they were planning the massacre at the school that they attended.
Yes.
And that they wanted to stop, you know, traffic on a freeway so they could summarily slaughter people sitting in their cars and stop traffic. It's just like, how antisocial and unhinged can you get? It's just really something.
And then the other thing I found terrifying was the FBI people speaking on television yesterday about how this is a growing concern in the agency that Hispanics are turning to become supporters of these extremist Muslim groups.
So they see that as a trend?
They see it as a trend. And I've never heard of that before.
Nor have I until this moment. That is very disturbing.
Mm-hmm.
And
so, well, can I say why it's disturbing?
Yes.
The
reason
absolutely.
It's disturbing to me is because I think that at a time when we have all-purpose xenophobia, coming from
right.
more than one individual, but the name Trump comes to mind because he started with the Mexicans, with Mexicans erroneously. I just think it's very upsetting to hear that they're now the FBI is now kind of setting up a profile for another group of people of color who are already under attack for different and other reasons. I find that very disturbing. I guess if the FBI says it, that it has some, validity. Mm-hmm. But that's very disturbing to hear.
And my apologies, but in our last minute, the Democratic National Committee has told the campaign of Bernie Sanders that it was suspending its access to its voter database after a software error enabled at least one of his staff members to review Hillary Clinton's private campaign data.
This is the guy. This is the same Democratic committee which clearly is in favor of Hillary. Doing all of this, it was Bernie Sanders who alerted DNC that mm-hmm. this company, this provider, had put all this stuff online and that they could get into the Hillary stuff. Now they apologized and they said we shouldn't have looked, but this is not Bernie's fault. This is the provider's fault.
And also that staff person, a staff person, as I understand, who's now no longer with the campaign.
Convenient.
There were four people accessed. It came from four different computers, so it wasn't just one guy.
Yeah, did only one, though, get fired?
Only one got fired, yeah.
We are out of time. My thanks to all. No. Rosemary, you won't be with us next week, so
have a
beautiful holiday.
Thank you so much.
And we will see you at some point, either before or slightly after the new year, so
Correct.
We wish you well. Barbara, we will see you next week. Thank you very much. Good to see you. And Alan, we'll be back on Monday.
Can't give it to me.
We'll be back right after this.